Hey everyone, this is Brian Trenchard-Smith, director of Leprechaun 3 in Vegas and Leprechaun 4 in space. And if you really want to hit the jackpot of gold, you've got to download the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast.
Reporting live from the Black Lodge, it's me, the free will burning head turning ass kicking machismo dripping master podcast and mouthpiece of the southeast, Brandon A. Lane, bringing you a new edition of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast. March is upon us. You know what that means. You're gonna get pinched if you're not wearing green, so I invite all of you out there in the rant army to raise your pints, and whether it be an Irish whiskey or a green IPA, to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with us by listening along with a full-length feature commentary for the schlocky but awesome classic Leprechaun 3, directed by the gentleman you heard at the top of this episode, the great, the one, the only, Brian Trenchard-Smith. I want to give him a personal thank you for taking time out of his schedule to do that intro for us, and hopefully, if all things go according to plan, we may have him back on the show for a full-length interview down the line. As a thank you, however, I would like everybody to go out and check a few things of his catalog out that he has promoting at the moment. Number one is his classic film, The Man from Hong Kong, has finally been given a Blu-ray release, and you can find that on Umbrella Entertainment. I'll have a link in the description below, so you can go and check that out. Also, he has a novel out. It's called Alice Through the Multiverse. It's getting rave reviews. I'm going to have a link to that in the description as well, so please check it out. But if you need a little more greasing of the wheels to get your anticipation and enthusiasm for this project, I'm going to read you the description. Alice awakens in a psychiatric hospital, believing she is the daughter of a 16th century executioner. Is she insane? Or has a portal in the multiverse opened to a past life, where Alice and her outlaw lover are hunted by a corrupt noble and his henchmen? What is the agenda of the handsome doctor who kidnaps her? Why would the security agents kill to possess her? Get ready for a time paradox roller coaster ride blending thriller genre and a sardonic take on history, destiny, and timeless love. Join Alice as she is catapulted back and forth between deadly conspiracies beyond her understanding. I invite everybody out there to follow Mr. Smith on Twitter. You can find him at General Murray. And if you aren't already, I invite all of you as well to follow us on Twitter at Rants Black Lodge. And of course, be sure to download, subscribe, rate, and all that good stuff on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM. And don't forget to visit us at our homepage at juicykruger.com. Now, before we get to our messages from our sponsors, we've got a giveaway to give. And if you were to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to the podcast, you are instantly eligible for a Rants from the Black Lodge t-shirt, a 11x17 poster, hopefully autographed by as many of us as I can track down at that time, and a sticker. So, without further ado, let's get down to it. I'm going to reach into a crudely made bag with all the names of the people who subscribed and followed us on Twitter, and I'm going to go through right now at random and pick somebody through. So here we go. All right, and our winner of the t-shirt, sticker, and 11x17 poster is none other than David Thomas. So David, please send us a DM and we will get your size and shipping information. We'll get you that stuff as soon as possible. Do bear in mind it will take a little while for them to print the t-shirt and shipping and blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying. Be patient. We'll get it to you. All right, guys, let's go to messages from our sponsors. Then we'll be back with a full-length feature commentary for Leprechaun 3. Stay tuned, folks.
Next Generation Wrestling brings some of the most talked about and star-studded professional wrestlers from around the world. Based out of East Tennessee, NGW is becoming one of the most sought-after independent wrestling promotions in the past 4 years. Witness NGW Live or on demand on the High Spots Wrestling Network streaming app. Follow us on social media platforms at NextGenTN.
Yeah.
All right, Rain Army, don't call it a comeback. The man sitting to my left making his valiant return to the Black Lodge. Not just Fat Tony tonight, he is...
Drunk Tony!
Yeah, that's right. We've been tipping over the line just a hair, enough to give us a little more Odin-esque insight to this occasion.
Our ritual is every time I come over, we must immediately have a shot to the one, the only, the great, the late, the missed, Lemmy Kilmister.
Of Motorhead?
Of Motorhead, and to Odin.
Yes, our All-Father.
Hail, All-Father. I do want to point out to everybody in the Rant Army that this is take two, that this unprofessional schlub sitting next to me did not have his notes and had to roll away from the microphone, so we had to take two,
hey,
but I like this one better anyway.
Hey, they call me the take two kid. And
my mom does.
Damn right she does. As does Judd's mom and just about any other mother of any other the esteemed panelist of this podcast. So tonight we're going to be checking out Leprechaun 3 from 1995.
God, it's so long ago.
So long ago. 95, a banner year. Not really, but
no.
We'll forge ahead.
Hey, I was 14. Yay.
I was in fifth grade. There's a slight divide between our ages.
I would have been eighth, maybe going into freshman year of high school, so.
Yeah. Finger banging.
Banging. Dude, I went to a church school.
I envy you. And now I have to make up for that by diddling mothers.
Yes, but my mother needs it. She's lonely. I'm the only friend of his who approves of him banging his mom, so it does take a little pleasure for him.
Yeah, Judd, what the fuck? I give your mother hours of pleasure,
just sweet loving.
Yeah, I don't get any enjoyment from it. I'm doing that's my community service.
He's doing God's work.
All right, let's cue it up. The first thing you're going to see is the Trimark, or is it Vidmark? I don't know. Whatever.
TriStar Vidmark.
Yeah, the logo. And so what we're going to do is, if you want to watch along with us, by all means, I encourage you to do so. It's always nice to have a visual aid with our audio commentary.
Will be completely unnecessary because the powerhouse minds of both me and Brandon are, well, more than enough to give you all the entertainment you could ask for, and more. You're welcome.
Auditory ecstasy. Wink, wink.
Eargasms.
If you just want to listen to us rant, then by all means, you can do so. But if you want to watch along, you're going to cue your DVD up with the logo. And on the count of three, hit play. 3, 2, 1, play. And there we go. Trimark. I think Trimark Vidmark was a subsidiary of Trimark. I don't know. It's complicated.
This is top tier garbage, but Vidmark was for bottom tier garbage.
It's true.
I say garbage, I mean that with every bit of affection in my heart. You know, this is still, it's not the peak my favorite Leprechaun, I'm sorry to say, is Leprechaun 4, Leprechaun in Space.
Also directed by Brian Trenchard.
Oh, good. Then I'm still being nice to the man.
Yes, who was nice enough to give us an audio intro that you heard at the top of this episode. So here we have Leprechaun 3, which was released June 27th, 1995. It had a budget, which is estimated at $1.2 million. We don't have an exact number, but however, it was the highest grossing direct-to-video film of 1995.
Did not know that.
So this movie, was a, what do they call them, a shelf mover. You know, they put it on the shelf and it gets moved, like, right out really quick. I found this mind-blowing. Now, we've reviewed good movies on this podcast. We've reviewed bad movies on
Scooby-Doo
this podcast.
Scooby-Doo Meets Kiss. Bad movie.
Exactly. Bad movie. The other Kiss movie, also bad.
Oh, yeah.
This movie, on Rotten Tomatoes, has a 0% score.
Bunch of fools.
I mean, listen, I can get it. Like, a mainstream critic is going to watch this and they'll be like, this isn't very good. But genre critics? How do you give this, like, a bad review? This movie is quirky. It's the effects are cheesily enjoyable. Everything about it screams cult film in the best way possible.
That Indian man's toe looks delicious.
It does. We're going to get to him in a few moments. This movie has an audience score of 33%, so it's a little more forgiving, which I still think is a bit on the low side. On IMDb, it has a 5 out of 10, which is surprisingly good.
I think that's more, probably a more accurate viewpoint.
About half the people. You're going to have people like us, like, hey, throw Sleepaway Camp 3 on instead of like, oh, I must watch the Suspiria remake with
Dakota Johnson.
And honestly, that was a good movie, though.
I have yet to see it. It's on my list.
Yeah, he won't watch the Evil Dead remake.
Hey, I just watched the Death Wish remake, and he's giving me shit because I've yet to watch the Evil Dead remake. So, yeah.
Charles Bronson is ashamed.
He probably
in Valhalla.
He probably is. And yes, he is in Valhalla.
Fuck yeah, he is.
These two gentlemen we have right here, we have the aforementionedly named Lucky. He obviously is not very lucky. You can tell by the fact that he's falling apart. He's played by, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Richard Reichegg. He's also in Oh God, Book 2.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, good movie. The Tripper, which was directed by David Arquette.
Love that movie.
Yeah. I'm the Gipper. I'll kill you because you're a liberal.
You need to do that movie one day.
If we can ever get David Arquette to respond to our tweets, you piece of shit, I love you.
We love you.
And as I pointed out, the joke is that he is not very lucky at all.
Eye patch, hook hand, missing a leg.
Tattoo says lucky. It all ties everything wonderfully together. This character, who's playing the shop owner of the, what do you call these?
Pawn shop.
Is Gupta. His real name is Marcelo Tubert. He was in Vampire in Brooklyn with Eddie Murphy.
I remember that.
Tremors 2. The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Several episodes of King of the Hill, Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous.
My favorite of the Miss Congeniality movies.
Exactly.
I don't have a
favorite. And he was also in G.I. Joe Retaliation. Fuck that movie. Better than the first one. Still shit.
Yeah.
Here's my quick connection, as we do most episodes, if not every episode, to Ghostbusters. Marcello was in Miss Congeniality 2 with Ernie Hudson, who was in Ghostbusters. So it's a nice, quick, and to the point.
Straight line.
This movie was directed by Brian Trenchard Smith. Now, I would have, before yesterday, I would have pronounced that Brian Trenchard Smith. But after speaking with him and his very proper English accent, I know that now that it is pronounced Trenchard. So Brian Trenchard Smith directed a whole bunch of fairly memorable movies. BMX Bandits, which was Nicole Kidman's like third or fourth film.
I do remember that movie.
He did The Quest with Henry Thomas. That was a movie like
it turned out to be a crane or some kind of like bulldozer thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I used to love that movie as a little
kid.
It's
not the movie he did immediately after E.T., but it was like
fairly soon
afterwards. He did a few episodes of Mission Impossible, a few episodes of Silk Stockings, which for anybody who grew up watching
USA pseudo porn, yes, love it.
That was a big deal.
Fuck yeah, it was
for me in the '90s. You know, staying up past my bedtime to perhaps see a Silk
Stocking.
We're
exploring our bodies. You know, that's what puberty's all about. That's what USA knew. They didn't give us complete X-rated smut because we didn't need it.
This is a little off topic, but real talk here. USA Up All Night, who was the better host?
Gilbert Gottfried. Don't argue with me. I appreciate, I can't even think of her name. That's how little she means to me. Gilbert Gottfried.
All right.
Linda,
I guess it's
something, wasn't it? What was her name?
If you hadn't said that, I probably wouldn't have been able to
see. So she wasn't that great. We remember Gilbert Gottfried, so I believe, as always, I win the argument.
So this is going to be my opportunity. I don't know if I've done this on the podcast yet, but this is going to be my opportunity to do my Gilbert Gottfried impression.
Oh, let's hear it.
Tonight on USA Up All Night, The Howling 3, The Marsupials, rated PG-13.
That was a really good Gilbert Gottfried. I appreciate it.
Decent. He,
to make a callback from last episode, it's like I'm in the room with Rich Little.
Oh, yes. The kids love Rich Little.
They always do.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got to stop everything. This is the big problem in the movie with me. This chick's car breaks down. This is Dollar Store Christy Swanson. We'll get to her name later. She starts trying to thumb a ride in an oncoming lane of traffic and almost is ran over by the wide-eyed young man going to college and gets smart-assed with him. What the fuck? That's my. I can get down with the logic that a leprechaun is killing people over gold and a magical amulet. That is my major problem with this movie. Plus, that guy's got to be like 27.
Well, I can't exactly tell you how old he was at the time. The fellow you're referring to is named John Gattens. He plays the character of Scott McCoy, our protagonist, if you will. He has small roles in Witchboard 2 and Pumpkinhead. However, his claim to fame is not in the acting world. It's in the writing world.
Oh.
John Gattens wrote Hardball with Keanu Reeves. He wrote...
Fuck that movie. It made me cry like a baby.
He wrote Coach Carter with Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson.
Good movie.
He wrote Real Steel. And he also wrote the sequel, if it ever gets made. He wrote Kong Skull Island.
What?
Great movie, right?
Fucking awesome movie.
He wrote The Power Rangers, the new movie.
I didn't hate it.
I didn't see it.
I had to sit with it with my nephew because he saw Power Rangers. And it's a bunch of angsty teens for like 90% of the movie. Last half hour, really good. Other than that, eh. I didn't grow up. Power Rangers just missed me. So
yeah, I was past that point. So it was not like a pillar of my childhood, you know, Power Rangers. Now, obviously, you couldn't avoid it during that time. I mean, there were store shelves and on TV.
I do have to point out that this movie has a sweet, sweet lesbian Power Ranger that's pretty fucking hot. The actress is over 18. I checked before I said that.
Okay. I'm glad. Thank you for clarifying.
I don't know if her character was. Probably not, but the actress is.
So that makes it okay. I'll allow it. The Think Police will give you a pass on this one. the young lady we saw, who is our, I guess you could say, our other...
Dollar Store Christy Swanson.
Yes, our other protagonist, the Dollar Store Christy Swanson.
That still means she's hot.
Oh, yeah, she's very attractive, especially later on when she puts on that very...
the magician's assistant outfit.
Yeah, that's some hot shit. Her name is Lee Armstrong. She's playing the character of Tammy Larson. This is her one of three acting credits that she has. And one of the other ones is, I think, like a voiceover job. Maybe the other two are. I can't remember. This has been a while since I did my notes. But this is the movie, like, from this on, she, like, just dropped out of acting. She
went into poop porn. I'm just playing. That was an old joke called back to the original Drunk Tony Review.
It's a very,
where Patricia Arquette. That's a deep dive.
That is very deep cut. Nobody's going to get that. And yet again, I invite everybody, please track this down.
Can find Drunk Tony Reviews Nightmare on Elm Street 3, A, I'm sorry, I'm a better person now. B, it's still pretty fucking funny.
All right, bullshit. No, you are not a better person. You have become
a better facade.
Better at hiding your awfulness.
That's true. I don't want to get Brandon kicked off, deplatformed.
Well, you know, the bad thing is like all the horrible things, I'm doing my fair share of prompting and all that. Like, hey, say this horrible thing. Yeah. Now say this horrible thing. Those were good times. Lee, also, she had a short internship on the Howard Stern radio show, which I'm sure Howard fucking loved her.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I don't know how long that lasted. Probably long enough for her to be sexually harassed.
Probably.
Settled and then left alone. Allegedly, I'm just joking. I don't want to get sued by the King of All Media.
If the King of All Media listens to this and sues you, that'd be the best thing to happen in this podcast. You'd blow up.
That would be great. Yeah, please.
Fuck
please.
You, Howard Stern.
We all love you. Did you ever watch the show
back in
the 90s? That was another, very near pornography for teens of our generation.
I hate to keep calling back to the last episode, but you fucking young people are spoiled with your little porn bot phones.
It's a shame that you don't have to work for it. That was the thrill, the absolute thrill of the possibility of seeing a nipple.
You know, I bet nowadays kids couldn't tell me where they saw their first titty. I can tell you the exact movie I saw my
Please
first
tell
titty.
Me.
Slums of Beverly Hills with Nick Nolte and Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh my God, yes.
Not Slums of... Oh, yeah, Down and Out in Beverly
Down
Hills.
Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
That Slums of... Again, Drunk Tony here.
Slums of Beverly Hills is the movie with the
Sit on My Face girl from Orange is the New Black. The
can't think of her name, but yeah, she
that chick.
She was in American She's bangable. Pie. Yeah, Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah.
So this film kind of diverts from a little bit of the mythology of the previous Leprechaun films. Now, obviously, the scene we just saw with Gupta looking at the
CD-ROM.
The CD-ROM of Leprechaun lore. Why would he have that? Because the movie needed him to have that. But this movie introduces a sort of vampiric element to the Leprechaun that's going to come into play later on with our main character. But how do you feel about that? I mean, obviously, I guess you have to introduce new things.
Exactly. This is the third film. They know right off the bat that this is low-budget, schlocky, direct-to-video horror. So why not, you know, have a little fun with it? Why not change up the mythos, you know? Again, like this part three, like Nightmare on Elm Street 3, 4, and 5, they break the rules set down by the first two. But who gives a shit at this point? Let's have some fun with it.
I'm just going to state for the record, I think this is the best well-made of the Leprechaun films.
I still say part four, they're all fun, bad movies. Part four gives me the most joy inside watching it. Especially the really bad effect where he grows giant.
That's good stuff. I'm not knocking it in the least because I find Leprechaun 4 like hilarious. You know, whether all of that's intentional or not, I think all of it is.
I honestly think from the very first Leprechaun, because this is the Leprechaun series is post Freddy, post Jason, post Michael. There's nothing they can do to be scary. The first one doesn't even really try to be scary. It's still, hey, let's throw shoes at this Leprechaun. He's gonna fall. Cause they know it's fun. They know at that point in time, what was it, 91 that the first one came out?
It was 93. I was in third grade. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it when it came out on VHS.
Same.
And you can hear me probably recount the story in our archives in the Leprechaun 1 episode we did, but I'll just recount it now if I'm pretty sure I told the story. That's been more than a video. So, my aunt and uncle, I don't want to say they were liberal, but they would allow me to see things that, like, my parents wouldn't see. Same thing with my grandmother. I just got away with seeing stuff that I wouldn't normally see. I was still at that age where, like, I wanted to see the shit, but it still would, like, really freak me out. Like, for instance, I saw Jason Goes to Hell and Freddy's Dead in the theater. They both freaked me the fuck out, even though they're probably not super scary movies.
Pussy.
Exactly. However, this is probably the first horror... Well, part one was the first horror movie I ever saw that did not scare me. I enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. And I was like instant fan of Leprechaun. But it didn't put any sense of dread into me. I didn't go to sleep and have the fear that if I roll over, the Leprechaun's going to be on the other side of the bed. You know, I didn't have any of that. So, yeah, these movies are self-aware. Like right here, we have a bow and arrow
out of a statue
of Cupid. It's very tongue-in-cheek.
That poor guy gets fucked up, man. He really does. He has his ear bitten, half his ear bitten off, a toe bitten off, shot with a bow and arrow.
It actually kind of speaks against the effectiveness of our antagonist, the Leprechaun, because he should have no problem knocking this guy off. Yeah, I realize
Discussed with Freddy, he did have a little more fun with his victims, you know? He'd take a pogo stick and jump on him to death. And say a jaunty rhyme. He is a horror movie antagonist with personality and character. You know, Warwick Davis is awesome in this. I saw the one with the new actor playing Leprechaun Origins?
Leprechaun Origins is the prequel with WWE superstar Hornswoggle.
He's no Warwick Davis. He did a fine job.
Leprechaun Returns. Is that the movie you're referring to?
Okay, it was without Warwick Davis.
Okay, that's Origins.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about.
Don't talk about Returns yet. We're gonna get to that. We actually have a question about that from our.
I want to take this point in the movie before it gets too deep. I need to ask Brandon. Why did you pick Leprechaun 3?
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, it's March. It's appropriate to do a Leprechaun film. And I flat out will just be honest, I don't like Leprechaun 2. I think it's a shitty sequel. And this movie is fun. It has a lot of quirky things to talk about.
Bringing it to Vegas was a stroke of genius.
Yeah. I mean, oh, by the way, there on the end, that is our antagonist, Warwick Davis. And his cameo outside of the makeup. Let's do a rundown of everything Warwick Davis has done.
Oh, God.
To date. Oh, but actually, before I get to that, these three on screen right there, do they look familiar to them?
The priest and two whores.
The priest and two whores. Those characters are from another film Brian Trenchard-Smith directed, A Night at the Demons Part 2.
Oh, hell yeah. I didn't know he directed that. See, I don't know who directs, produces, writes anything ever. I've seen them all, and I enjoyed them, and there was, like Brandon said, I watched this movie night before last, or most of it. I had to, like, turn off the last 20 minutes. I have a job, boo.
Yes, exactly.
And it was late. But, you know, I did recognize briefly.
Well, it's cool that they're in this film, and it, I guess in a sort of a off, not official kind of way, puts Night of the Demons and the Leprechaun franchises in continuity with each other, because they are playing the same characters. It isn't just them, you know, reprising or, you know, dressed similarly. No, they're billed as the same characters. By the way, the priest was played by Rod McCary, who's Father Bob. Zoe Trilling plays Shirley, and Merle Kennedy plays Melissa, also aka Mouse, who is probably the protagonist of that film, all reprising their roles from Night of the Demons 2. It's a cool runabout, you know,
nod
to everything. But the main thing that ties this movie together, like I was getting ready to say, is Warwick Davis. He has, to this point, 83 acting credits. And he started acting when he was, like, I mean, a little kid.
Was Wicket his first?
Return of the Jedi, exactly. He was in both Ewok movies, the Ewok the Adventure and
Battle for Endor.
Battle for Endor.
Where they just kill the family right off the top and ruin the first one.
Exactly.
Those were movies I saw at a very young age. Everybody's like, oh, blah, 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 prequels. I'm like, no, man, what really fucked it up was the Ewok movies, man.
You know,
I love the first one.
I saw those movies as a kid, and to me, they were as important of Star Wars canon as everything else. And they've kind of been washed away from history now.
I have not seen them since being a child, and I don't ever want to return to them.
They're bad.
Oh, I have no doubt.
They are very, very bad. And
with the exception of Ghostbusters, 80% of the movies I loved as a child are really, really bad.
That's exactly why I will not revisit The NeverEnding Story.
It's fucking awesome, dude. I watched it the other day with the girls because one of them said, I don't think I've seen that. My stepdaughters, and this was actually, I say the other day, it was probably about 6-7 months ago, and I was about to like hit my fiance for not showing her kids The NeverEnding.
He's joking, by the way. He's joking.
No, I'm not. But I didn't have to, because when I started, they're like, oh, I have seen this, and that movie holds up like a motherfucker.
Okay.
The second one, dog shit.
Oh, you know.
The third one, I only saw that. I saw the third one like 10 years after it came out.
I didn't know that movie exists until the Nostalgia Critic did an episode on it, and a young Jack Black is in that
film. Oh, yeah. He's like the only almost decent thing in it.
Okay, well, I've never seen it. The second one does not hold up. It didn't hold up then. But I loved the first one so much
as
a kid.
It still holds up.
Okay, well, I might break my rule and give it a rewatch, but same thing with, we have a question about another one of Warwick Davis's very famous roles, which is Willow. I have not watched that in years either, because I don't want to ruin my memory of it.
It's still, I mean, it you can see the flaws in the movie that the adult audience saw at the time. But I watched it numerous times, like all throughout my adulthood. And it's still a really good movie. Val Kilmer, it's probably...
Matt Mardigan.
That's my second favorite Val Kilmer role. Probably after Real Genius, because that was a very formed movie in my childhood.
All right, I'm gonna diverge just a hair. But I used to get Real Genius and the Yahoo Serious movie, Young Einstein, completely mixed up as a kid.
I'm leaving. This podcast is over.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was a stupid kid. Sorry, interject.
Okay.
The check he has in his hands right here, the signature on it is Brian Trenchard Smith, the director. It's a little in joke.
Well, that is.
But
awesome.
Let's give the rundown of Warwick Davis, because he's been in so much. like I said, Willow, which is, I guess, his signature role, other than the Leprechaun series. Yeah. He was in Phantom Menace. He's in been all, pretty much all, if everyone, if not most of the Harry Potter films.
Pretty sure he's in all of them.
That's not my thing. Not knocking it, but
I love the Harry Potter movies. He doesn't, you know, so maybe I need to back off of him not watching Evil Dead. But no, Harry Potter is good.
I saw the first three. I just couldn't get
the third one sucks.
That's got Gary Oldman in it. It was very surprising.
There's other ones with Gary Oldman.
That's why I stuck it out. I'm like, I'm going to get to the one Gary Oldman's in, and surely I'll like this one. I did not. So, maybe in 10 years from now, I'll give it another try.
Your heart is cold and dead.
Indeed it is. One of my favorite Warwick Davis roles is a movie called Skinned Deep. It was produced by Fangoria, or at least released by them.
Is Bruce Campbell in that?
No.
That's not what
okay. This movie is sort of like if they made a shitty version of House of a Thousand Corpses or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's about a weird, like, family. And he plays a character called Plates. Well, Plates is a little person who throws plates at people. it's a lot more entertaining than I'm doing it justice to promote.
I'm going to stop just to interject real quick. I did, before we began recording, I joked with Brandon how I'm going to keep calling him a midget and correct myself, and I almost just did it now, and I felt bad. He's a little person.
He is a little person. He's our favorite little person.
Yeah, no, I had to think about that for a moment. Yes, he is.
I met Vern Troyer. He was really cool. One of my favorite memories, God rest his soul, by the way, because he's no longer with us, and also is not the gentleman I'm about to refer, but I was at a convention, and Vern Troyer was on his little scooter, and he was trying to get to the bathroom, and it was so dense with people, he just couldn't get around. Well, the guy who plays the maniac cop, Robert Zadar,
picked
him up and carried him like a baby to the bathroom.
Because he's a goddamn saint.
No joke, he was such a nice guy, and it was sad. Like, before he died, he got divorced, and his wife took everything from him.
I won't say the C word on your podcast. Yeah,
see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday, woman.
But, yeah, he didn't get to be in Samurai Cop 2. Robert Zadar is missed. He was super nice. I bought him a hot dog that day because the con floor was so busy, and like he wanted something to eat, and I guess his manager or whatever had like gone off to probably steal his money, because that's just the situation most of these guys find themselves in. They get someone to handle their money, and they're taking most of it. And he was saying how hungry he was. Like, dude, I'm going to go buy you a hot dog. Because he was really cool to me. He treated me like I was fucking royalty. So, Robert Zadar, probably the nicest celebrity I've ever met. And I know a lot of people are shitty when it comes to like B-movie actors and stuff. He was the villain in Tango and Cash.
Fuck you, Billy D. Williams. We went to a con. I just wanted to see how much the autograph was. Not even for me, because I don't give a shit. And like his handler came in and acted like I'd fucking like pissed on a Bible or something, because I spoke directly to the man and didn't see the little fucker over there at the other table. And but no, good celebrities, nice celebrities, you know, they're a treasure.
I'm debating on whether or not I want to tell my Billy D. Williams story,
or
when I met him. Okay, I'm going to tell this, but I'm going to preface this as like I'm going to use a word that he used, and I'm using it in context.
I'm going to
okay. I'm going to do it in context. This is 100% honest to God what he said to me. All right, I'm standing in line. I'm like third in line, waiting for probably like half an hour for him to show up to his booth. And he comes in. He's wearing sunglasses. He's wearing like a purple velour tracksuit. He's got a ring on every finger. He's got like the fucking gold chain, like LL Cool J style. I mean, like, he was decked out like a 1980s pimp. He looked awesome. Anyways, I'm standing waiting in line, and actually in the room adjacent to where we're recording this, I have my Empire Strikes Back poster, one of my all-time favorite movies. I had to get Billy D. Williams' Lando Calrissian autograph on there. I go up to him, I'm kind of nervous, because at this point I haven't met a lot of, like, what I would consider big celebrities, and the first words out of his mouth is, "What's up, my nigga?" And I don't even know how to respond to that because I'm because
we are two of the whitest people you'll ever meet.
I'm transparent. I'm white, and I know there's probably going to be somewhat people offended that I even said this, but remember, this is what he said to me. I'm not trying to be.
The racist.
I am not racist in any regard. That is furthest thing from the truth. But I came off as the most, like, I don't know how to even put it. Like, I was so fanboying that he even talked to me. But I was so thrown off from the moment because he just threw a verbal hurdle on me. And I'm like, I don't even know what to say. Sign my poster.
I'm no good. Racism bad. Sign me, please.
But then, you know, before I even had a chance to even respond, my poster was signed and they were hurdling me out. So that's my Billy D. Williams story.
Wow. I'm glad he was nice to you. Okay. Like I said, I wasn't even asking the price for me. There were two other, like, Amy was with us. That was right before you started dating our friend Amy. And she was curious.
That was a long time ago. She's married now.
Yeah, she's happily married. Went up, just asked, and I'm going to take it back a little on Billy D. Williams. I always spend a lot of time on this. It's the little asshole next to him. Billy D. Williams did not look mad or offended. I spoke to him, but he did not respond, so still a little fucked up.
Okay.
Now we're getting back to the movie. Let's get back to the movie.
I want to diverge one more time, and I'm going to butcher this story because you just reminded me of something. Fat Fuck Scott, one of his friends is stationed on an Air Force carrier.
Well, thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service. And it just so happens this is where they're going to be filming, or they are currently filming, Top Gun 2. They have been expressly told, do not make eye contact with Tom Cruise.
Hail Xenu.
You know what? And I'm going to say this. I don't even care if you sue me. You Scientologist piece of shit.
You short Scientologist piece of shit.
Fuck you, Tom Cruise. You have no right to tell people not to look you in the fucking eye.
But God, that last fucking Mission Impossible movie was fucking awesome. I will say that. Hate him. But it was a really good goddamn movie.
Yeah. I mean, he can bring it when he wants to. The movie, they kept renaming it, Live, Die, Repeat.
I can't even tell. That's a good movie, too.
That was a great movie. So, I'll give you your props. You're very talented.
You can be good when you want to be.
But that Scientology bullshit, or I don't know if it may not even be that. It may just be you just a piece of shit. But fuck you. Look people in the eye. At least feign interest when they're around you.
Get like a stool to look them in the eye, you short fuck.
Exactly. And I'm a short person, but I gotta stop.
We are how long into this movie now? We got to the first kill. He just killed the shop owner. Finally.
Yeah, well, Gupta put up a pretty good fucking fight.
Gupta, you know, you're in the arms of
Why didn't Vishnu? He just leave?
Huh?
Why didn't he just leave?
Because the leprechaun would have followed him because he had one of his gold doubloons.
But he had...
Or shilling. No, he kept calling it a shilling.
He had the thing to protect himself.
Yeah, but he got around it to fuck him up pretty bad. Leprechaun's pretty clever. He'd have found a way to kill him anyway.
Well, if you're going to get killed anyway, do it out in the open. So here we have, this is the shifting point of our film with our protagonist finding the shilling. And, well, he's calling the cops right now, but he's going to find the shilling, make the wish on it that, you know, he's all of a sudden he's going to have an unlimited, winning streak at the tables and everything.
Unlimited poon is what I would have wished for from my sweet fiance, Sarah. Well, late happy Valentine's Day, baby.
Yeah, by the way, at the point we're recording this, this is the day after Valentine's Day. This is probably, would you say that there's a spike in morning after pills today?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
See, luckily, you know, us being mature adults, she's fixed. She's had her too. I can just do whatever. I can go raw. I'm trying to keep it in because I don't want to get him deplatformed. I can go a lot worse. I want you all to know I can go a lot worse. But Warwick's about to, or the leprechaun's about to fuck shit up, man. That looks like Ben Franklin on that fucking shilling, gold shilling. She's been in a lot of shit.
That is Caroline Williams, who's working the, is this called Craps? Roulette. Caroline Williams has been in tons of stuff. Most notably, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Woo!
Which I just watched at work the other day. It was slow. She also has a blink and you'll miss it cameo in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, which, gentlemen, we worked with the last episode, the one and only Mick Strawn was the production designer.
Hail Strawn!
But, yeah, she's at the very beginning of the movie. I don't think she even has any lines, but she's standing when they find, like, they're in the car, and there's, like, cops and coroners and stuff they found at the side of the road.
That pit of the desiccated, rotting
corpses.
Yeah,
well, the idea is that, like, after the events of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, she's pursued a role in the media, like, on camera, to flip the lid off these situations. She's also in The Legend of Billie Jean. I'm going to give a shout out to Margaret Bridges. For years, she has been telling me to watch this movie. I haven't ever seen it. It's not for lack of, like, desire or whatever. I just, you know,
my sister,
it's never been in front
both
of me.
Both of my older sisters liked it back in the day.
She's also in Stepfather 2 with Terry O'Quinn and Meg Foster, who I had the biggest crush on as a kid. And unfortunately, for those of you who have seen Rob Zombie's 31, man, she
got hit hard by age. I love her. Are we speaking about the right person? She was also in Blind Fury with Rutger Hauer.
Yes, the most beautiful eyes you've ever seen. God. She was Evil Lynn in the Canon movie Masters of the Universe.
Hail Canon.
Oh, we love Canon movies around here. Canon movies is the reason, hands down, why I branched out and loved cult movies growing up.
Hell yeah.
You know,
my mom did ruin Masters of the Universe because that was the first time I ever heard her use the word sexy talking about Dolph Lundgren.
Oh my God.
Which I'm not going to argue. Okay, now as an adult, I see he's sexy. But you don't say that to, like, I don't even know what year that movie came out. I couldn't have been older than 6 or 7.
I was, like, 87, 88, 89.
6 or 7, there you go.
Yeah, I'm visualizing your mother being hunched upon.
She was flicking the bean in the theater. It was bad. Oh, she's not going to listen to this.
Well, maybe if more mothers had flicked the bean in the theater, we could have got a fucking sequel. Because there's a stinger at the end of that movie where Skeletor isn't fucking dead.
That's, honestly, I'm not even joking right now. This is not the alcohol. That's my favorite Frank Langella. Frank Langella role.
Academy Award winner, Frank
Skeletor.
Langella.
Skeletor. He killed it. No matter what other faults you have of that movie, he fucking nailed Skeletor.
The only thing I don't like, and the makeup in that is actually pretty good, but the only thing I don't like is the fact that the makeup, the skull is white. It should be at least slightly yellowed. Give me a look that's appropriate and inspired by the comics.
My name's Brandon. I like to nitpick.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the movie real quickly. He's won a shit ton of money, just in case you're following along. If you're not, you know, whatever. We're awesome. You're entertained. You're welcome. I love you. That's where we're at.
This actor, who's sort of like the manager of
the Golden Nugget Casino. Hey.
That's not the name of this casino.
No, he walked by the Golden Nugget. This is
actually let's talk about where this was filmed. It was filmed the interior. This is the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. And you actually have to give them a lot of credit because there's a lot of extras in this film.
Yeah, there really is. They fill it like a casino.
It makes the film look bigger than it actually is.
Yeah.
And the exterior was filmed in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is, you know,
Can't replace that on a $1.2 million budget. Just got to go there.
Now, I'm not sure if they had permits or if they just filmed, you know, they drove around and filmed
shit.
And stuff.
The director had the balls to make that brave choice. Thanks for the intro. We love you.
Yeah, we do, Mr. Trenchard Smith.
Yes. I'm too drunk to say that.
But anyways, the boss I was referring to, who's now off screen, his name is Michael Gallen, or Callen, actually, I believe, and he plays the role of Mitch. He was in a bunch of stuff He was in Gidget Goes Hawaiian. He was in the Magnificent Seven Ride, which is the... I don't know if it's the first sequel or the second sequel to the Magnificent Seven.
I want
to
say second. The second. I'm not 100%, I think it's 80%.
Because I think it's the Magnificent Seven Ride and then the Magnificent Seven Ride Again. Yeah, with Yul Brynner. Great, great movie.
The original, man, it's been so long since I've seen the sequels. I haven't seen that since a kid, but I watched the original about a year ago, and it still holds up. I honestly, that's another remake that was I really enjoyed.
I've yet to see it, and not for lack of desire. I just
but he watches the Death Wish remake.
It was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Well, I'm giving you good remakes. Magnificent Seven, fucking great.
I will
Evil watch. Dead, fucking great.
I just can't. I can't.
You can't because there's a post-credit sequence with Bruce Campbell that should have tied it into the show, which I love, but he just can't let it go.
I can't.
Anybody listen?
We both grew up in Morristown, where Evil Dead was
filmed. I have been to the site where the cabin was.
I have too.
I stole a piece of pottery out of Josh Jesse's little box of pottery that was in the movie. I had a piece.
Shout out, Josh Jesse.
Josh Jesse, I hope you're doing well. I haven't heard from you in a while, but we love you.
I haven't seen you in a long time.
I'm going to hunt you down and make love to you.
Okay. Well, he's going to make love to you. I'm not really interested in that. I just remember
likes to watch. Hold on, I gotta stop. He's meeting the Elvis impersonator. This has hung with me since the very first time I saw it. I love it. I love Warwick Davis's little, you know, quick Elvis impersonation right there.
Yeah, Elvis impersonators are quite prevalent in the area which I live. Sevierville, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg. The Sevier County area.
I'm just going to piss him off and call it Gatlinburg.
There's a guy in this area. There he is doing his.
Yeah, I love it.
But there's a guy in the area by the name of Cody Slaughter. He plays young Elvis. He's very, very popular with
it's a badass name.
With the ladies. However, he's not my favorite. All right, in this area, there's a gentleman by the name of Lou Vudo who plays...
Also a badass name.
Lou Vudo plays the just about dead on the toilet Elvis. I'm being shitty to him because he's a nice guy. I see him at Walmart all the time. But he doesn't mean to be that type of Elvis. It's just maybe you need to lose a few LBs, my friend.
Hey, buddy, I'm a big guy too. You do you.
You do you.
don't check into the Heartbreak Hotel. That's like the only Elvis song I can name. If you Blue Suede Shoes and Heartbreak Hotel.
Hey, you should know Blue Suede Shoes because it was covered by our favorite band, Black Sabbath.
That's true. And also Leslie Nielsen in the great movie Exorcised.
Repossessed.
For some reason, the devil hates rock and roll in that movie, which makes no fucking sense. Whatever. Leslie Nielsen, you are the biggest part of my childhood and my heart.
My background, I worked in a newspaper for the better part of a decade between a couple of newspapers, and probably the saddest thing I ever had to do was put Leslie Nielsen's obituary in the paper. What a titan of comedy. Like Airplane, Naked Gun, those movies are so good. But, listen, that doesn't discount his...
Dramatic
roles. I mean, he's one of the best villains. You see him in
Creepshow. He's one of your favorite movies. It's up there with me. I love it. And let's not forget his reputation as a gentle, giving lover.
Okay. I didn't know that firsthand.
My mom told me.
Do you think
you're getting drunk, Tony, people. That's what the fuck you're getting. I love all of you.
Do you think Leslie Nielsen's bush was white as well?
It was white when it grew in. He's like, and he never had to trim it. That shit was perfectly manscaped. Not shaven, but kept to a respectable length with clean lines.
Oh my God. He and Steve Martin are both people that like were old like forever.
Yeah, they both. There's actually a name for it when you gray early, like Steve Martin and.
My point I'm trying to make is: do you think his pubes turned white before his hair did?
I think the pubes are the last to go, to be honest, because I have worked with some elderly people who I've had to change their briefs, who were going gray and not gray down there. Okay. I used to work with developmentally challenged people. I had to change briefs. It will not make fun of them ever. But I did some gross shit, and I've seen a human testicle out of the scrotum, so that's a long story. We're not going to get into. He was fixed.
We'll do an entire separate podcast on your
on my stories. I also have stories from other times in my life that are fucked up. But
most of which we can't advertise.
No, we can't. Fear of we can. We repercussions. You'll have to find us. Find us in like email, or I hope all of y'all join the contest that Brandon is running with this podcast.
Yeah, at the top of this episode, by this point, which I'll be recording later. That way, we have more opportunities for those who are listening
to make me look like an idiot.
Well, yeah, of course, but to give more people time to enter our contest, which will be giving away an 11x17 print of our newest design, autographed by as many of the people we've had on the show as we can, a t-shirt of your choosing of our designs we have available, and a sticker, because we want to give back to the people who support this podcast month in, month out.
Well, I'll want a baby tee, because I'm going to win.
Okay, cut off at the nipples, right at the nipples.
So my nipples are very sensitive. It's got to go right below or right above. I have very thin, sensitive nipples.
Let's talk about John DeMita. We're seeing here.
The magician.
Playing the magician, Fazio.
Why are you going to blow a smoke bomb and then stop to look around and make sure it worked?
Comedy.
That's I know. This, you know, there's the more I watch this now, there was some fun direction in this movie. That's a good intro.
You know, for a shot, not shot on video, but a direct-to-video movie, this looks good because it was still at the point where they were shooting on film.
Film.
So it has a production quality that a lot of you don't get on direct-to-video.
Well, sure, okay. I'm going to preface this. About 5 years from this point, any direct-to-DVD movie would be shot digital or on, you know, videotape. And look like shit. This is the sweet spot. Yes, the dummy going out of the window. This is a sweet spot when they still shot it on film, so they still felt like real movies. And that was a weird distinction in my head as a child and young adult. Like, okay, Leprechaun 3 is a real movie, but I can't think of anything right up hand shot on video.
I want to give another shout out to Mick Strawn, who was on the podcast last episode. He worked on Boogie Nights, which is a movie about porn, but Burt Reynolds' character makes a point because they're at that turning point where
it went from movies to just fucking on video.
Yeah, and he's like, no, we make movies with film. It's an art form, and I know you can poke holes in pornography
it's
you want.
Classic.
But if the movies that were made during the 70s and then the shit that came out in the 80s, there's a wide gap because they actually tried to make them more cinematic. Yes, we're seeing the Leprechaun transformation.
Leprechaun transformation.
Which is, this is a new aspect
of... This is what you were talking about, like the vampiric thing. I get that. I do like it, especially now. Still fairly intoxicated. I probably enjoy it more. I watched this on Tubi the other night. You say Tubby or Tubi?
Tubi.
Tubi.
Like the boob tube.
Like porn tube.
Yes.
I love you, Sarah. You're never going to hear this. I made her listen up to the point where I gave her a shout out last time because I fucking told the audience I would, and I'm a man of my goddamn word.
I don't care if she listens to it. Just download it. I need those.
I grabbed your phone and downloaded it, so it's all good.
Appreciate that. Fazio here has done a lot of voiceover work. He did Princess Mononoke, Vampire Hunter D, Final Fantasy X, Lilo and Stitch, Dynasty Warriors 4, Heavy Feet 2, Naruto, Dragon Ball Super, One Punch Man. He's also in Friday the 13th of the Game. That's weird. I don't know how he ended up with that, but that's cool. I play the game to this day on a almost daily basis.
This man I am sitting next to right now, he's the biggest Ghostbuster fan you'll ever meet. He's also the biggest Friday the 13th fan I've ever met in my person. And I love the movies. He's got like a display case with the various things. You've met most of the living.
There's only Ted White. I haven't met him, and I've met Tom Morger, Dick Weiland, which technically you could argue they're not really Jason, but that's beside the point. But
either way, this man loves his Friday the 13th, so he is hardcore about that game. And unfortunately, because my love for my stepdaughters, I got an Xbox One, and he has a PS4.
So listen, bitch, and I'm being straight up right now. It's tax time.
It's time.
Buy a fucking PS4.
Well, I'm a goddamn man with no kids to write off. I owe taxes, but I'm going to school right now, so I get some financial aid back. And I'm probably going to try to buy a PS4 to play at a pawn shop near me.
If I have to fucking buy you one myself, you have to experience.
I would just do it just for that.
It no joke, and I'm not a big gamer, but I play it all the time, so I really, really enjoy it. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but if you're a Friday the 13th fan, this is everything you possibly
want. We gotta stop. Dollar store Christy Swanson is popping them titties up, trying to look sexy, and
she's seducing Mitch,
the manager.
I'm gonna give some more rundown of his work, because I kind of got off.
Yes.
On the magnificent.
Whole podcast has been off the rails, but you love it.
That's fine. He was in Chained Heat with Linda Blair and Sybil Danning.
Yeah.
Two of my childhood obsessions. Linda Blair, and I know The Exorcist is a great movie, but she was a little young to be fawning over. However, Exorcist 2, which is a terrible movie.
Fucking hot.
Oh my God. She is so attractive in that movie. Chained Heat, she's really hot too. You get to see her. Her boobies. But Sybil Danning, oh my God. There's a scene in Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf, also known as Sturba, Werewolf Bitch.
I did not know it was known as that.
That's the alternate title. because she's Sturba, the Werewolf Bitch. There's a scene at the end of the movie where they just replay a scene where she rips her top off, and they do it like four or five times in a row.
Yeah, I know the scene you're talking about.
Do you, when DVD first came out, like, I'm...
No, we're okay, so what, fucking old!
When I first had DVD.
When it became
which was like
financially
2000,
affordable.
2001, maybe 2002. There's the AB button.
Oh, yeah. Set a loop, baby.
Just long enough for you fill in the blanks for what happened there.
He masturbated.
Shit.
I did, too. I'm not going to shit. I didn't set up the AB... The last form I owned that was on VHS, so I had to keep rewinding with my left hand. You know what I'm saying?
Like a fucking pro.
Like a goddamn champion.
Michael Callan was also in, he played Metallo on the Superboy TV series, the live action series.
The only episode I remember of that is one where he thinks time's frozen, but he's going super fast or slow, or I don't know. I remember one episode of that show.
I watched the Superboy TV show a lot.
I watched it. I only remember one episode.
But that's the point I was getting to make. It's like, I don't really remember a lot of what those were about.
Dean Cain kind of came and owned Superman of my youth. I'm not saying
Lois
it's good.
And Clark, the new
Lois and Clark was hot garbage, but... Dean Cain was in a God's Not Dead movie, so he can suck my nuts. Hail Odin.
Hail Odin and Gozer. He was also in Stuck on You, one of the Fairley Brothers movies. He had some smaller roles in One Life to Live, That Girl, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Love American Style, The Love Boat, Charlie's Angels, Fantasy Island, T.J. Hooker, Knight Rider. But here's the big thing. In 1961, he won a Golden Globe for Most Promising Newcomer, and that led him directly
to Leprechaun 3.
Exactly, Leprechaun 3.
Well, they fucking had it right then. And you kind of skipped it. T.J. Hooker, did you say Knight Rider?
Yes.
Like, all the kick-ass shows of the early 80s.
So yeah, he got to
champion. He got to hold the hip of dollar store Christy Swanson, who you said her name. I don't care. I hope you're living well, and you know Howard didn't put it in your butt or anything. But
her name is Lee Armstrong, and
Lee's a man's name. I'm going to call you dollar store Christy Swanson, and to me, That is a high praise, because Christy Swanson was like the name of my boner for like a decade.
Okay, do you remember the movie Blown Away?
Fuck yes, I do.
Yes, with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman.
And it had Nicole Eggert's titties in it?
Yes. Oh, wait a minute.
You're thinking of Nicole Eggert,
aren't
you?
That's who I'm thinking of. You caught me.
I beat him on minutia.
Okay, Christy Swanson was, she was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, correct?
In the movie,
In the movie. The only one that counts.
The one I probably literally chafed my penis watching.
Okay, I'm getting her and Nicole Eggert mixed up.
Both super hotties of the 80s and early 90s.
Okay, well, Blown Away has Nicole Eggert naked in it. My apologies. Still go check that movie out. You gotta love the Corys.
When the podcast is over, I'll hit him in the nuts.
I demand you do so for reparation of my mistake. So
I'm gonna do it for the Death Wish remake, but anyway.
I probably...
We're starting it late into the movie. We might need to start... We apparently, Brandon had a lot of questions on this one.
Let me run through a couple more things, and then we will get to that, because we're about to come to what a lot of people remember about this movie more than anything. And we have Mitch, who is getting knocked in the nuts by dollar store Christy Swanson.
That makes me a little hard.
Just a little.
Just a little. There's she's like covering her boobs.
Trickle of blood.
It's like a. It's not even a half chub. It's a quarter chub.
Yeah, that's respectable. We're going to have a scenario where a thing is going to come out of the television to entice Mitch into coitus, or at least. The opportunity, what he thinks will be coitus. And yeah, that's
really the big notable element of this movie.
Yeah,
anybody who has seen it will know exactly what the fuck we're talking about already.
Yeah, we'll wait for it to play out.
Look at this fucking leprechaun wannabe eating potatoes. That's racial stereotyping. And as somebody with a lot of Irish in me, I'm not offended at all. I don't give a shit. Potatoes are delicious.
Well, I was actually going to make this point later on, like when he's like taking on the leprechaun characteristics, he's doing a really, really stereotypical Irish voice or, you know, inflection. Is that racist? I'm going to say
it's racist, but not bigoted. And by that, I don't think what I mean is they're not trying to portray anything in a negative light with a negative thing. It's just how they wanted to portray Irish. It is racist because it is very stereotypical. Anybody that's heard a real Irishman talk can know they're really unfucking intelligible for the most part because of all the whiskey they drank. That's a joke.
It's a joke.
You know, it is, hey, titties in the movie.
Yes, we have breasts in the film.
We're going to back it up to what he was talking about before.
The breast you just saw, which it's cut away from them, unfortunately.
But a steak and potato dinner is still pretty fucking hot, too.
Oh, actually, let's talk about this waitress. Her name is Lee Allen Baker. She had a recurring role on the Spider-Man cartoon from the 90s. Also on Charmed, the show about the female witches, and on Hannah Montana more recently. So
Fuck was she on Hannah Montana?
I don't have a fucking clue.
I used to have to watch that like way back in the day with youngins and like
youngins. That's a southern.
Okay, I was lied to about the paternity of a child who somebody said was mine, and I used to watch who I thought was my daughter marathons of that goddamn show. Took her to a concert to see Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus. I'm the only person out in the smoking area. I'm wearing a Pantera t-shirt. It was not... Hold on. We're seeing titties. We don't need to discuss my tragedies in life. She's still a great gal. Everything's fine. There's titties.
This is Heidi Staley. I literally have...
Of course her name is Heidi.
She is not credited with a name, but I'm going to call her Slut in TV.
I'm going to let the slut one go this time because she's not real.
Exactly. I'm not saying the actress is a slut. I'm saying the character is a slut.
Yes.
She's the penthouse pet, October 1994.
I know what I'm going to be Googling later.
So they couldn't get the playmate. They went to the
this
penthouse.
This is a second tier, you know. Penthouse is second tier.
But here's the thing. Was penthouse really second tier? Because you could see more in penthouse.
Penthouse did not have the cachet of the Playboy name. Penthouse was a better magazine for any man with a penis. But in, you know, societal, in the zeitgeist, Playboy has the catch. Playboy's who gets the celebrity. Penthouse got some.
Heidi Staley has an...
Did Penthouse get Tiffany? No.
No, you're right, you're right. And my God.
Mall pop
she
shit.
Is so fucking hot. Oh, my God. But before we get to go off on another tangent... Heidi Staley has quite the resume when it comes to erotic cinema. She was in Forbidden Games, Island Girls, Exotic House of Wax, and probably my favorite title to any movie I have ever heard, Heavenly Hooters.
My quarter chub is now full chub, people. I could break a diamond with it. So, my fiancé, no, that's a lie. I love you, baby.
But it's okay if you
sadness.
It's okay if you knock yourself down because that's a good sign of.
Let's get this straight. If any of y'all motherfuckers meet me on the street, I am a son of Odin, and I will put it in your butthole to show you how hard I can get it for vengeance.
But self-deprecation. That's just for fun.
I love Catholic priest leprechaun.
So. We were in the midst of what Mitch believes is going to be full-on coitus. And it's not going to quite go the direction he was hoping for. Now, I don't remember when the Miss Cleo...
It was around this time. Definitely. Called me now. Miss Cleo was definitely in my early to mid-teens. So it was around then.
Okay, well, I would imagine this is a definite reference to the Miss Cleo fortune teller psychic ads. And now we have a fuckbot.
Now my quarter chub is totally again full chub. I love sci-fi.
I love cinema.
That's Ex another, machina.
It's very, very, very much.
Ex machina are just rip-off hacks of Leprechaun 3.
Mind blown. It does actually in a...
It kind of looks like it.
It does kind of... I mean, this thing has exposed breast, so it's
well, there is
as...
at one point in the movie where she gets the skin. And...
Does she? It's been a while since I've seen it. It's a good movie, though.
It's a fucking great movie.
Science
right before
fiction,
she fucks everybody over, it's like...
Science fiction is fine. In most cases, it's sort of... these days, not well done. I thought Ex Machina was terrific. It definitely bridged the gap enough for... there's a thing called the Uncanny Valley, where you have something that's a facsimile of a human likeness, and like your brain is like... It will have a tendency to accept something within
a certain range. Yeah. And if there's... If the Uncanny Valley, it's like, this is not right.
Yeah, and... That movie doesn't bother me. Like I'll be like a half an hour in, and I'll just completely forget that it's.
No,
even
I can't remember the filmmaker's name, but it's an amazing movie. It's probably one of my favorite sci-fi movies of like the 2000s. There's like that Moon.
More recently, Arrival was
Arrival.
Very good.
Fucking blew me away.
I want to talk about Arrival for just a second. I watched that with a couple people in the theater, and they were like, "Boom, this movie sucked." And once I explained it to them, they're like, "Oh, wait a minute, that makes a lot of sense."
Because they're stupid people.
They're not stupid. They just didn't pay attention.
Oh, they were people with you.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I thought they were the audience. They're not stupid people. Brandon does not associate with stupid people.
By the way, these two getting the shit knocked out of them with the leprechaun shillelagh.
I've seen that guy in a lot. The blonder guy.
The the one who's playing that just got knocked out in the suit, that's Tom Duggan. He was in The Naked Gun. He was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I could have made the one direct connection for Ghostbusters, because he was in Ghostbusters too. Just a small role. I think he's in the scene when they're in the restaurant. I might be wrong on that.
He's probably not, though, people.
He was in Marked for Death with Steven Seagal. He was in Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was directed by Ivan Reitman. So,
blah, there's blah, so blah. Many connections.
he was Dave with Sigourney Weaver, who is in Ghostbusters.
Oh, my God.
And more recently, he was in Hellraiser Bloodline. Well, actually, that wasn't recently. That was in, like, around the same time.
What, 08, 09? Bloodline. No, that was like late 90s or 2000. No, later.
No. Bloodline, that's...
That was the last one that, like...
No, Bloodline is the fourth movie. That's the one that...
That ended Pinhead with the Perpetual Light thing. So, man, I might have been a sophomore. So, that's like 97, 98.
I can't remember. It was...
I saw it in theaters. Yeah. I was excited. I had the Fangorias... It was late 90s, early
2000s. Well, Kevin Yeager directed that movie, but he Alan Smithied it because he...
It's not a great movie, but it does have a lot more Pinhead than the others.
I just watched, not long ago, the reconstructed work print of that film, and it could have been great because... But it should have been two, maybe three movies. They tried to cram way too much into one film.
On a quick aside, I didn't hate Hellraiser Judgment. Where I say Dollar Store Christy Swanson, it's Dollar Store Pinhead, but the movie prior had Dollar Tree Pinhead.
Yeah, that guy was awful. This guy actually did a decent job.
It's a 6 out of 10. You know, I liked it more than I hated it.
We're kind of a little past it, but the goon in the Hawaiian shirt, the other like security guy from the casino, that's Roger Hewlett. He plays the character of Tony. He was in Roadhouse. He has small roles in Dexter, American Horror Story, The X-Files, which everybody works on The X-Files.
Everybody.
He worked on Third Rock from the Sun and Herman's Head. Did you ever see
Herman's Head? I loved Herman's Head. It's like a precursor to the movie Up.
Yes. Very, very
The little
weird.
Chick who does the voice of Lisa was in that show, and I had such a thing for her back
then. Oh,
that
God. And
don't ask me her name. Don't say that.
Yeardley Smith.
Wait. Yeah, that's her name. Like that
also,
movie.
Also, it was on Fox. It makes sense.
It's on Fox. It's all the same thing. Here we go with the roulette girl earlier having the gold coin, now hooking up with the magician.
Yeah, who he's obviously not interested in her feminine wiles, but he stole the coin from her, so she can't make any more
sexy wishes to be a sexy lady. And she just strolls to the mirror like it's nothing.
Does she look better or worse? I can't really decide.
Honestly, when she ruffled her hair, that's what made it slightly better. When it was flat to her head, I'd say worse.
I don't know, because Caroline Wims is not an unattractive lady, but
no, she's absolutely
She doesn't look great, I don't think, in either one of these instances.
No, she has like boy hair and. This magician, I am not bringing talking trash on the magician that has his theater in Severe World of Pigeon Forge or Gatlinburg. I'm not certain. There is a certain magician from the local area.
He looks just like him.
Looks just like him. He will remain unnamed because he's a local man. He might sue. Who I did see twice, and I've researched a lot about magicians and how they do things, and in both times I saw him, he had at least three tricks that there are no way I know how he did. I give him full props, but he does look that guy a lot.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, is it weird that a lot of magicians look the same?
I gotta have my silky shirt, vest, same hairstyle, where I all have black hair. I don't know.
This movie was...
Oh, no, her boobies are blowing up.
This is a cool effect, actually.
Yeah.
And her lips, and I'm sure this is just bladders under the makeup.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Half-chub people.
You're really...
That's horrible.
She looks like a character from Howard the Duck when her lips get really big, and that kind of unsettling. Big ass.
I can't wait to see the Howard the Duck TV show fix.
Yeah, I heard about that. Kevin Smith. Yeah. Howard the Duck, sort of a cult favorite of...
That's another movie that came out in my childhood that I did see later, and it doesn't hold up.
Oh, no, it doesn't. But Leah Thompson.
The whole movie, when I was a child, I loved it. I'm like, oh, my God, there's... And, the nostalgia critic, duck tits. But I'm like, oh, my God, there's duck boobies.
I to this day, have really strange feelings when Leah Thompson... Nice effect blowing up. When Leah Thompson, like, ruffles Howard's feathers... As a kid, like, I didn't know why that made me feel
happy
the way it
in your
did,
pants.
But now I do, and I approve Leah Thompson. She has aged very well.
She really has. Again, I love you, Sarah.
This movie was written by David DeBose. He wrote Future Shock with Martin fucking Cove, a.k.a. John Steele from Steel Justice, which is my favorite corny action movie. He also wrote Playback, which stars Tawny Kitaen and Harry Dean Stanton, who unfortunately is no longer with us. The composer of this film was Dennis Michael Tenney. He also composed some music for Night of the Demons 1, Night of the Demons 3, Witchboard 1, Witchboard 2. He also did the music for Leprechaun 4, Pinocchio's Revenge. His brother, Kevin Tenney, directed Night of the Demons and Witchboard, so a little in the family kind of thing.
The original Witchboard scared the shit out of me. I grew up in a very religious background, going to church school. The first movie messed me up.
The cinematography in this film was done by David Lewis. He did cinematography for The Hills Have Eyes Part 2, which is not a great movie.
It's a movie.
Was shot and never really intended to be released. It was Wes Craven was keeping it in his back pocket just in case he needed a movie to release to have cash on hand. But once Nightmare on Elm Street got rolling, it got released because, like, okay, we can capitalize on, you know, Wes Craven being a big deal right now. He also did UHF.
I love that movie.
With Weird Al Yankovic, terrific. He did 20 episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse. Now, looking at this film and some of the things in it,
it
makes perfect sense.
I really see it.
I really do. It all kind of clicks. He did Children of the Corn 5, not a terrific movie, but none of the Children of the Corn movies really are. The first one is okay.
Yeah. Outlander, we have your woman. But I'm out in direct sunlight, so I should be burnt because he's a soulless ginger.
He's very, very redheaded. Courtney Gaines.
Yes.
He looks like Dave Mustaine from like 1992.
He fucking does.
David Lewis also did the cinematography on a whole bunch of the Olsen twin movies. I mean, you gotta take the
he's a pedophile.
No, he's not. God.
Hey, that was a joke, people.
Please take that as a joke.
I meant that as a joke.
I am fine with getting sued by Tom Cruise or Howard Stern, but I will not be sued by David Lewis, cinematographer of
Leprechaun
3.
A fine man.
The editor of this film, Daniel Duncan, he also edited Witchboard, Witch Trap, Night of the Demons, I Spit on Your Grave, the remake.
God,
which
that
is
movie
a
fucked us up, man.
Fucked up movie. Poseidon Rex, I've never seen, but I'm assuming it's a movie about a T-Rex who learns to swim.
Poseidon Rex? I really thought I just misheard him just now.
No, that is 100% a real thing.
I want to search it.
The special effects in this movie were done by Mark R. Byers. He did Menace to Society, Surf Ninjas, which I don't know why this has come back again because we mentioned that on the last episode. Man's Best Friend, which is I actually prefer it to Cujo, but I'm maybe in the minority on that.
I do like was it Acid Piss or Fire Piss or Man's Best Friend had some kind of weird piss, didn't it?
It's been a while.
So
Lance Hendrickson is in it.
Lance Hendrickson is the only thing I remember about it.
Dumb and Dumber, Scream, Phantom's Blade, From Dusk Till Dawn 2 and 3, You Got Served, which is probably the dumbest movie ever made, Cursed, which is sort of a forgotten Wes Craven movie with Christina Ricci.
It kind of should be forgotten, but Christina Ricci's hot in it.
Yes, she is.
And Scott Baio has a nice little douchey cameo.
Gotta love Scott Baio. Charles in charge.
Nicole Eggert.
It all ties back. It all ties back. Rob Zombie's Halloween, which is...
I like it. I'm sorry. Everyone kiss my ass. I like it. I like it better.
I don't hate it. I do dislike the second half of the movie because it's just a condensed version of
the first. I don't dislike any of it. Whatever. It finally showed me. What's her name?
Oh, Danielle Harris. Her Danielle fucking Harris. Boobies.
Boobies.
Well, I'm not going to knock the movie for that. That was a miracle. We do love you, Danielle Harris. You are a treasure. He worked on the Sex and the City movie, the Red Dawn remake.
Sex and the City movie. Oh my God, it's like my favorite movie ever. And there's the second time in the second episode this fucker didn't have his phone on silent.
It's nobody's calling me, so it's fine.
It's nobody's calling him this time, but it still popped an alert.
My phone's dying. That's the alarm to let you know that we're nearing the end. He won a Primetime Emmy Award, he being Mark Byers, who did the special effects in this movie, for outstanding special visual effects for the episode Family Affair from CSI. So, I mean, he's obviously gone on. Did you
say Daytime Emmy?
Outstanding visual award. A Primetime Emmy.
Primetime Emmy. Okay, I thought you said Daytime Emmy. And I'm like, CSI is not a soap opera. It's not a daytime show.
No,
that's fine. Primetime Emmy. It has shows some CSI has great special effects. My mom, grandma, aunt, they're all like, Murder, She Wrote, Matlock. I'm like, when CSI came out, I'm like, they're never going to watch this. This is too gory. They fucking ate it up.
I love William Peterson. I've been a big fan of his.
He loves Peter, too.
Hmm?
You love Peter, too. William Peterson.
What the fuck?
We were stone dead staring at each other for a second. I thought he was going to smack me.
Completely threw me off.
William Peterson.
William Peterson. He was in Manhunter, which...
Yeah, I prefer that to Red Dragon.
I do.
I don't prefer the villain. I'm sorry. I prefer every other element, but Ralph Fiennes. It is spelled Ralph. He's one of my favorite actors because, anyway, I prefer that version, but in every other way, Manhunter's a superior film.
I think William Peterson is spellbinding in that movie. I don't say that lightly. The way you can see the wheels turning when he's like putting the pieces together. When he goes and he's watching the tapes of the families and stuff, you can see him processing information that he's not conveying verbally.
Yeah, it's just Edward Norton and not Dogging. I liked Red Dragon. I liked Red Dragon better than Hannibal.
Read
the book, people. The book's amazing. But, you know, I liked him, but I did love him, William Peterson in Manhunter.
Yes, as... The detective whose name is escaping me. Will Graham.
Will Graham. I want to say Will Byers for some reason, but Will Graham. I knew it was Will something.
Will Byers. Isn't that, who the fuck is Will Byers?
It's something.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to quietly Google it while Brandon continues to give us facts.
Will Byers is somebody.
It's a character from something.
It is. All right. We're going to knock out some general trivia and then we'll get to our questions, which we have quite a few. This movie was reportedly filmed in 14 days.
That's the fucking, kid who got kidnapped in Stranger Things.
Okay, yes. Yes, that makes perfect sense. The first thing that popped in my head when Byers was, Paradise Lost, because the kid was named Byers, one of the three kids that gets killed in that, but that's completely out of what we're talking about. Warwick Davis says this is his favorite of all the films he appeared in the Leprechaun series. Do you think that's a...
He probably had the most fun. A lot of exterior filming in Las Vegas. That means he's in Vegas for a while. He gets that, like, Okay, I like 4 because it just, it's fucking Leprechaun in space, people.
He has a lightsaber.
He grows to be a giant. But this one, you know, he has the fun of being a TV psychic, a priest asking for money. I can totally understand why this is his favorite. You know, he gets to have a lot of fun with it in a lot of variety of ways. They filmed in L.A. and Vegas. I'm sure there was a lot of fun. I'm sure all he had to do was roll into a casino like, hey, I'm Willow.
Yeah.
And, you know, rolling in it.
I have no idea how long it took them to put him in his makeup. But you can tell,
it's going to be several hours.
Yeah, but you can tell that he just revels in getting to be that character.
Oh, absolutely. He has a lot of fun with it.
Okay, reportedly, and I can't substantiate this, maybe when we have Brian Trenchard Smith back on the show, I can ask him this directly, but reportedly, this movie was considered to be shot in 3D, but it was dropped due to budgetary concerns, which, I mean, that makes perfect sense. This is a low-budget film, and 3D, it's not that 3D cost a bunch, it's that the time you have to spend to set up your shots, and you have to control your movements to such a
specific
degree that it makes the process slow down, and time literally is money on a film set. Alright. This was the first film of the series to be released direct on video. It's not... I mean, I think this movie could have been released in theaters. And I'm assuming the reason for this was they knew it would make a bigger profit direct to consumer than taking a shot in theaters. Because I'm sure the first movie did decently comparatively to its budget. And probably the sequel even did as well. But they're looking for a wider margin. And when you take into consideration the budgetary concerns on promotion and just having it in so many theaters, there's a lot of moving parts that you've got to take into consideration. And I'm sure they just wanted to make it a little bit more of a sure bet. So I think now would be an excellent time to roll out what questions we have as we're nearing our conclusion to Leprechaun 3. Our first question comes from Ben Hopkins, longtime listener of the show. Probably, I would say, top three fans that we have.
I love you, Ben.
His question is, have you seen the new Leprechaun film? If so, how do you feel about it? Personally, I like it, but I'm curious on your take. I haven't seen it yet. I'm a physical collector, and it has not been released on DVD yet. I'm assuming by the time this podcast is out, it'll probably be getting to be released around St. Patrick's Day. But it got released on Sci-Fi Channel, and it's available on demand right now. But I just like to have it in hand.
I've got to interject. I have seen it. Again, it for the pack... Like, I mean, it's better than Leprechaun in the Hood or Back to the Hood. I like it better than Part 2. You know, it's a fun movie. I don't hate it. I mean, I'll give it like a 5.5, a 6 out of 10. It's worth a watch if you haven't seen it.
You know, I think a lot of people were probably like, everybody's unhappy that it's... I don't think anybody's going to be like pissed off at his disregarding continuity with the Leprechaun series, but a lot of people are unhappy that it's not Warwick Davis. And
let the man like go, people. He's done enough for you.
he's done so much. But I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but the guy that they got, I mean, he seems to be really digging the character and really into it.
That's the saving grace. There's a lot of weakness around it with the story, you know, but that Leprechaun is, you know, I mean, whatever actor, and you know his name, I don't, or, you know more of him than me. He's having fun with it. He's relishing. Oh my God, I get to be, and maybe I'm just projecting this on him, I get to be a character that Warwick Davis, like the king of the little people actors, gets to be.
Yeah.
And he has fucking fun with it. But, you know, there was some, like we, again, God, everything ties the last episode. It could have used another pass in screenplay mode.
I think most...
Most all movies ever, you know, you can always nitpick them to death. It's a sci-fi movie at its heart. Like, I saw it on demand, uncensored. It's not that much different. Like I said, 6 out of 10. I liked it more than I disliked it.
All right, well, there you go. 6 out of 10. This comes from Fat Fuck Scott. What is the best Warwick Davis film? And he interjects, and why is it Willow?
It's fucking Willow. You're right. Everybody can... Well, okay. It's the best movie that he's led. I'm sorry, dude. I like Harry Potter movies. Harry Potter Part 7 is fucking off. How are you going to watch fucking Dobby die and not cry? Kiss my ass, Brandon.
I don't even know who that is, so that's...
It's the house elf who dies saving Harry and his friends. When that book came out, I bought 2 copies because my girlfriend at the time had broken her ankle and I had to sit up at the bedside toilet so I could go to the midnight sale at Walmart. And I bought 2 copies so I could read one, and she didn't fuck with mine and she had her own. Well, Warwick Davis was the goblin who...
I don't fucking care.
Grip hook.
I don't know.
Again, I'm sorry. I love y'all. I am drunk Tony right now. But, honestly, the best movie he's led is Willow. You are right, Scott.
I'll concede to that. One of my favorite movies growing up, Ron Howard's a terrific director. This comes from Allison Hunt. I worked in a video store when this movie was released. Trimark/Vidmark sent a lot of promotional materials to hype Leprechaun 3, including a t-shirt that I sadly no longer own. Shame I know you're a collector, so do you own any horror promotional items? I own a lot of promotional items. A lot of them are Ghostbusters related, but I also have some Friday the 13th things. And a lot of them are like stuff that nobody would ever want.
I'm going to interject. He just received a screener copy
of Ghostbusters 2.
Ghostbusters 2 he found at a thrift store. I didn't know he found it at a thrift store. I thought he got it online. He told me the other day. But just that he had it, not where he got it.
Yeah, but yes, I got it for $1, so I instant return on my investment. Not that I would ever sell it.
Brandon's home is a museum to fandom, pure and simple.
Indeed, it is, and that is an understatement. I probably need to take pictures and post them on Twitter, but. Twitter is not my strong suit, as I'm sure a conversation we literally had today with the other members of the team behind the scenes. I was like, I don't want to do Twitter. Somebody else.
I don't know
how
the Twitter works.
Exactly.
Send me booby pictures.
Hey, I'm fine with that.
I'm loyal.
I'll gladly take your booby pictures.
My fiance got me a King Diamond action figure. I don't want any, but Brandon, send them all.
King Diamond, Rocky
Dracula,
we love
them. All booby pictures, Scott. Send yours.
No.
Yes.
I don't need to see.
Come to his house.
Scott's saddlebag.
Show him your titties.
All right, this question comes from Mark Owenby. I know it's cheesy, but as a kid, the scene where the leprechaun turns into a sex robot really disturbed me. I'm curious, what movies do you find genuinely disturbing? I'm going to let you take your first answer, and then I'm going to tell
you. Okay. Honestly, the most disturbing sex-related scene I've ever seen in a movie, and I'm very sorry, I don't know the name of it. It was a Fox TV movie supposedly based on a true story about a haunted house. And, like, the dad goes down and, like, gets attacked by, like, this ghost, and it just stares at him. And I hate to, again, it's a cliched answer, the crucifix scene... In the Exorcist also really fucked me up, like really bad. Now, Brandon, let's hear yours.
All right. I have seen most of the disturbing films ever made. You know, everybody goes through that phase. If you're a cinephile, you're like, well, I have to see Sal.
Slaughtered Vomit Dolls.
Which is terrific. It's not, but... a lot of people, when this movie came out, and this is not my answer, but... shit. What's the porn movie? Not Eastern Promises. Oh, fuck. Where the guy ends up fucking his own kid.
Serbian film.
A Serbian film. When I saw a Serbian film, 20 minutes in.
I knew ahead of time.
I called the ending because I'm fucked up.
We're all fucked up, but somebody spoiled it.
I'm so jaded that I predicted the ending.
I know what your answer is going to be.
But the only movie I have ever seen that genuinely bothered me.
He warned me legitimately not to watch this movie, and he's like, I'm not playing with you. Don't watch this movie.
This is, it's probably one of the most beautifully shot films ever. And that's the genius of it, is that it's this horrible visuals juxtaposed shot in such beautiful ways.
Gorgeous
to make you feel bad about what you're, like, make you comfortable or like really repel. It's hard to explain.
Let's say the movie.
The movie is called Antichrist. It's directed by Lars von Trier, who auteur.
Fuck you, and I love you, but fuck you, seriously, man. What the fuck?
He's the only person director wise that's ever made movies on a consistent basis that like I'm apprehensive about watching, but I have to see. We just watched the last time we after we recorded the podcast for the last
House of Jack Bill, and I fell asleep 20 minutes. Like, well, they're probably more than 20 minutes.
It was about 40 minutes. It was terrific. It didn't really disturb me, but there's disturbing moments.
It's fucked up, but it's not Antichrist fucked up.
Antichrist has a scene where Willem Dafoe gets his erect penis jammed with a log, and then a woman masturbates him till blood and ejaculate comes out.
Half chub, people.
And then the woman takes a pair of scissors and cuts her clitoris off. It's disturbing on levels that I can't even explain. But that's not what makes it disturbing.
I know.
It's all the subtext. It's woven so perfectly to make you hate.
He had a misogyny consultant on that. He wanted you to hate women, and he succeeded. The most disturbing thing to me after the movie, the second time I watched it, was the sex scene where they're actually having sex, and they have...
There's actual penetration,
but it's not Willem Dafoe or that actress. Yeah. It's porn stars. And a toddler dies, and it is gorgeously shot. Again, that's what the juxtaposition of horrific content with a master director.
And the whole thing is that, like, the father can't see the child on the ledge, but the mother can. Looks and she right allows it to happen because she's in the throes of passion. It's such a fucked up projection of, like, his ideology, whether that be...
No, he likes to do something that he doesn't agree with. But, again, in fairness to her, she's having sex with Willem Dafoe, so...
The scariest human being
ever to exist. Just to get back to the movie real quickly before we continue answering questions, the man burnt the gold, and apparently that's how you kill the leprechaun, and they didn't even really melt it that much, but flame to gold.
If you burn gold, wouldn't it just make one big ass piece of gold?
And he's like, you can't steal a tiny fraction of my gold.
You know what it would have made
This is going to run beyond the credits.
Oh, it will be. Definitely. But
you're welcome.
Would not this have been a better transition into the Hood series of like... But here's why. Okay. That big lump of gold is picked up by Flavor Flav, and he has it made into a giant clock necklace.
You know, say whatever you want about Flavor Flav, but I remember the Surreal Life season that had him. There's some kid feeling bad, like they're doing stuff with kids, like some project, and there's this like accordion player that really like was felt really bad about it, and he made that kid feel really good about himself, and I respect that. And he got to fuck Brigitte Nielsen. Did you? I haven't. She fucked Rocky.
She did fuck Rocky.
And Cobra.
But when Cobra fucked her, she was really fuckable.
Oh my god, yeah.
When Flavor Flav
got it well down the road.
All right, we'll power through these. Okay. What's your favorite death in Leprechaun 3? That's from Mickey Ross. It's gotta be the android fucking...
Yeah, the fuckbot.
The fuckbot. I mean, hands down.
I don't know. I do kind of... No, I'm going to take that back. I'm going to go different. The chainsaw magic trick.
Cutting it in half.
That's... God, they're really good. I want to say the android's really my favorite. I'm just trying to be different and give y'all people some context. But the chainsaw's really good, too.
Okay. This comes from David Thomas. I remember at some point a few years ago.
I love Wendy's. David Thomas. I'm sorry, David.
Oh my God. It's a different Dave Thomas. Send us Wendy's endorsements.
Yeah.
We love Dave Thomas. All right, this is from a different David Thomas. Okay. I remember at some point years ago, there was talk of a crossover movie. Was it supposed to be Chucky or someone else?
Candyman.
It was supposed to be Candyman, and this was confirmed fairly recently with Tony Todd. And thank God that movie didn't happen, but at the same time, there's a really morbid part of me that kind of wishes
I want to say it, but... apparently, I've never met Tony Todd. Brandon has.
I have.
He's kind of an out there dude. Tony Todd had too much respect for the character. And to be honest, of all of these, Candyman is the only franchise I can think of that did not break out into just straight comedy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's from his Clive Barker roots, because Clive Barker's straight fucked up.
Yeah.
And Hellraiser, that's even though they've been stupid, had never gone comedy. Candyman 1 and 2 were great. 1... phenomenal classic 90s horror movie. 2 is a really solid sequel. 3, whatever.
It's not terrific.
I don't hate any of them, but Tony Todd, I do respect him. When I read that article, he's like, no, I had too much respect for the character. That made me respect Mr. Todd more.
Yeah, he's a really smart guy. I've met him a couple of times. He's very opinionated, and sometimes that can probably rub people the wrong way, but I think you just have to, when you're speaking with him, he's not meaning anything negative. He's just very opinionated. I appreciate that personally, because you can have a conversation with somebody like that when they're just, you know, fall over and agree with anything you say. That's not a conversation you want to have.
Tony
somebody.
Todd hates puppies. I'm just playing, people.
Fine. That's
fine. He's a cat man.
All right, this comes from Touch and Tips Skip. If we ever get over the 1,000-member barrier once again, I know this is out of context for what we're talking about, but we broke the 1,000 barrier. We did a bonus episode, but then we had the great purge of Facebook groups in 2019, so we got knocked back down, but we're getting close to 1,000.
This pussy needs to put it out.
But once we do, you'll be hearing firsthand from Touch and Tips Skip, but this comes from him. This is his question. How do you think the third installment was compared to the first two? Better, worse, or around the same? Because usually in the series, they fall off from the first, the third.
Better than the second. Honestly, slightly inferior. Like, okay, in different ways, the first was fresh and new and different. The third was funny, inventive, and kind of out there. So I'm going to hold them about the same plane, but like Brandon said, it's better than this fucking second one.
Personally, I think this is the best Leprechaun film. The first movie, even though like it has like that dark comedy, it's still more, I guess, on the horror side. And because
it fails on the horror side.
Yeah, because the subject matter is a little goofy. It doesn't really hit. It's an enjoyable movie, but it kind of, you know, it gets knocked down a peg. I think this movie delivers exactly on what it should. It's fun. The kills are inventive. Warwick Davis is a blast. The other actors, I mean, nobody's going to be winning, you know, awards, but they're all serviceable to their point. All right, this question comes from Eric Sexton. Did the robot hot chick have a working vagina? Well,
yes.
I fucking hope she did. Otherwise,
yes, she
Mitch
did.
Died for nothing. Okay, this comes from Titty Flippin' Travis. Do you think the leprechaun had a cast made of his dick out of gold that was his prized possession?
His dick was more precious than gold. That is the only thing he valued more than his gold shillings. He doesn't need a gold cast.
By the way, I know we point this out every episode, but thank you, Travis, so much for sending us questions about genitalia. This is exactly what people download this podcast to hear.
You're damn right. He said that sarcastically. I'm saying it legit.
Related to the other dick question, do you think his dick was mini because he was a leprechaun, or do you think that fucker had a kickstand?
It was vastly disproportionate to his body size. And I'm not talking about leprechaun. I'm talking about Warwick Davis, the actor. He had a 9-inch penis. I don't know how I know this. I believe it in my heart.
The veins in his penis are bigger than my forearms. So there you go. There you go.
And they pump champion fluid.
We love you, Mr. Davis, and your giant we throbbing love you penis. And
your throbbing member.
Okay, this is our last one. If the leprechaun had a $100 bill hanging out of his zipper, do you think he could get laid? Absolutely.
He'd get laid and keep that fucking $100.
Listen, he doesn't need a $100 bill. He can go to fucking Cosby, and women will look at him and just think he's tweaking out on meth, think he's holding, they'll suck his dick.
Well, let's just be real. He's also a murderer. He can get laid and fucking kill him.
That's true.
He doesn't discriminate. He was woke back in the 90s. Equal rights, people.
Oh, all right. I think this is going to take this episode to a close. I think this we hit the jackpot on this one. And we'll
little
be,
people penis. You can't
little,
get better.
Little people penis. We'll be forging ahead, and we'll have more penis-related
content.
I'm going
to force myself into the next one, too, hopefully.
We'll see what happens, and stay tuned to the Facebook group and Twitter to find out what we're going to be doing then.
Don't forget.
You can follow.
What? The prize.
Definitely. By the time
by
you're
the
hearing
time
this.
This comes out,
by
I'm
the time,
drunk.
Well, no, this oh. this. Is going to come. We're recording this before we'll record that part. So at the top of this episode, they're going to know who won the prize.
Oh, yeah. I love you people. I'm drunk.
Follow us on Twitter at Rants Black Lodge and find us and download us, subscribe, and all that good stuff at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM. And don't forget to find us at our homepage at JuicyKruger.com. For Fat Tony, I'm Brandon A. Lane saying good night to all the ships out at sea. See you next time.